And by the way, it is awesome to be talking baseball, real baseball. We are joined now by an MLB Network insider, Sports Illustrated senior writer, three-time National Sports Writer of the Year. He is a two-time Emmy Award winner. He is a New York Times best-selling author. Tom Verducci is my guest. Tom, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I am great. Baseball's back. Thanks for having me, Jim.
That is so true, Tom. It's great. You know, looking at Manny Machado, let me start right there. Obviously, Tom, the White Sox and Ken Williams in particular were stunned. They were shocked by that signing. What was your reaction to the Padres getting their guy at 10 years, 300 mil?
Yeah, I was surprised that they were shocked, because anytime you put guaranteed money in front of a player the way the Padres did at 300 and the White Sox guarantee was at 250, the player's going to take the guaranteed money. I even know the White Sox had a couple of option years that could get it up to 320. And, you know, these guys all measure themselves really on what is the guaranteed number. And there's a magic number to get, you know, to a level where it starts with a three for Machado. Give the Padres credit. They stepped up to get the deal done. I was surprised that the White Sox were surprised. I mean, both teams now have really good young players. Both of them, I think, are close to turning a corner. And the Padres just made their route a little quicker. I mean, that's a team that could win around 81, 82 games as soon as this year, but I think can contend as soon as next year.
All right, so on that point, Tom, the move feels significant both on a team level and on a league level. Starting with the team, you mentioned that, and you also wrote for SI.com that the Padres have not had a position player start in the All-Star game since Tony Gwynn way back in 1998. So how important is this signing of Machado?
It's huge for me because it gives them a true face of the franchise. I mean, listen, their viewership in terms of their TV numbers have been down almost in half in the last 3 years. The ownership under Ron Fowler has not fielded a winning team. No one's got a Cy Young vote or even one MVP vote. You know, they just really have been off the map while rebuilding this team. And I think this gives them not so much instant credibility, but instant recognition. You know, he's a guy that's going to invigorate the Southern California area, especially the Padres fans. And I think he's the kind of guy that he's going to give you consistent elite results. A guy at 26 years old, and what he does, look at his games played. He's out there every day. Now, you can question, as a lot of baseball people do, whether he's the guy in the clubhouse. You want to be the one setting an example for young players. But in terms of name recognition, star power, elite production, you know, they bought some really a very low-risk guy at the age of 26.
We were talking to Tom Verducci. All right, then. So from a league-wide standpoint, the thinking going into the offseason, Tom, was that teams would be all over Machado and Bryce Harper, but they were still unsigned in mid-February. So exactly what's going on here? Like, is MLB free agency broken, or has the timeline for big moves changed from December to February?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. It's not broken. I mean, if you're a player and you're trying to sell your mid-30 years, yeah, it's probably broken. Jim, you know how much faster the game has become. Just look at the velocity on the mound, the way guys have to play defense out of shifts and have positional variability. That all favors the younger player, and I think now the amateur level is doing such a great job developing players coming up. It's kind of shortened the learning curve. I mean, think of all the guys, the Acuñas, the Correas, the Lindors of the world who hit the ground running at 20, 21 in the big leagues now. Teams are no longer afraid of young players. They're giving them opportunities. And no, it's not just because they're cheaper than older players. It's because they fit the modern game better. So, you know, if you're Adam Jones, he'd been a great player. In the old days, you would have gotten paid. You would have gotten a multi-year deal. Not in today's game. People don't want to buy your mid-30 years. So in that sense, free agency has definitely changed. But in terms of the timing, I think it's just a recalibration. We were so used to, you know, going way back here, you know, the Reggie Jacksons getting wined and dined by George Steinbrenner, and even Alex Rodriguez had a lot of suitors in November and was signed at the winter meetings. You know, the game just doesn't operate that quickly now. These contracts are much bigger. There's a lot more moving parts. The way teams look at players analytically, they try not to get emotional about buying free agents, and that makes it a slower process. So it's not broken, but certainly I think all of us, especially the players, but even us as media and fans, we have to realize that it's not the same free agency. It's going to play out longer than it did in the past.
We are talking to Tom Verducci. All right, Tom, so what about Bryce Harper? For instance, when you look at Harper, is he a better fit for a team that wants to win right now or a team that's rebuilding and needs buzz?
I think the latter, Jim. I think he's one of the few guys in the game that can sell tickets. He can drive TV ratings. I mean, listen, he can walk down the street of any city in America, and people know that's a baseball player. That's Bryce Harper. I mean, other than Aaron Judge, I don't know who you can say that about. As much as I love Mike Trout, I don't think you could say that about Mike Trout. So Harper has this value added to him that very few players have, right? So in answer to your question, yeah, he's going to make any team better. I mean, his numbers through the age 25 season in terms of getting on base and hitting home runs are on Hall of Fame levels. He's been that good this early in his career. So you're looking at his best years coming up. I think 40, 50 home run seasons you're looking at from 26 to 30. Beyond that, I mean, who knows? The swing is kind of violent. It reminds me of Tiger Woods, right? When you swing that violently, there's a toll that it takes on the body over time, especially as you age into your 30s. But for now, you're talking about a guy who moves the needle with the fan base, makes the team better. And what I also like, Jim, is he's the guy who wants to be in the middle of your lineup. I equate him to Reggie Jackson that way. May not be the world's greatest baseball player when you shake it down analytically, but, man, when you have him in the middle of your lineup and he's the fulcrum, everybody else slots behind him, he takes on all the attention, lets other people kind of just glide through what they're doing. He's a game changer in a lineup in a lot of different ways.
It's true, right? Like, his WAR is not that great, but he moves the needle. Tom, like, that point about Reggie Jackson, I mean, I think people listening right now, a lot of people listening right now do remember Reggie, but maybe some of the listeners are too young to really understand what that guy was about. The straw that stirs the drink. If you took a moment to explain Reggie Jackson, have you ever seen a star athlete who liked being a star athlete more than Reggie back in the day? He loved being Reggie, and that's why we loved him.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody, by the way, who loved being a superstar. I think he kind of invented that term, superstar, right? He loved playing that role. He wore the fur coats off the field. He loved the attention, the straw that stirs the drink. I think Bryce has got a lot of that in him. Remember, you know, I was the one who wrote the story about the kid when he was 16 years old and he's on the cover of SI. And I started thinking, man, maybe that's not a cool thing to do for a teenage kid. But Bryce being Bryce, he handled that really well, and I think it's something that he wanted, enjoyed, and put it in the right perspective. Type A personality type. Most of the guys you want, I think, up there with runners on base. And you're right, in terms of WAR, he's not a great defender. You know, last year he literally did not leave his feet on defense. And I think he did that to preserve himself in his platform season, to make sure he had the games played rather than another injury-shortened season. I think he's a much better outfielder than what he showed last year. I wouldn't say he's a great outfielder, and that does affect his WAR number. But this is the comp I like to use, Jim, talking about WAR. In the last 3 years, not just last year, last 3 years he ranks 86th in baseball in WAR.
Wow.
Corey Dickerson, who your listeners probably never heard of, ranks above Bryce Harper. But there's no question about, A, who you'd rather have, and, B, who you'd rather see as a fan. So to me, the value of Bryce Harper goes much more beyond WAR. And if we just, you know, reduce all these guys to algorithms, we're taking the romance out of the game. There's got to be room for emotion and romance, and I think fans want to see Bryce Harper play, especially if he's on your team.
Tom Verducci joining us. So who's going to see him play? Where do you think he ends up?
I do think he winds up in Philly. I've thought all along he's going to get at least a dollar more than Giancarlo Stanton, so say about $326 million. The problem for Philly now, it looks like they may be bidding against themselves when you're talking about that level. I mean, the Giants could be in it, but I don't see them nearly at that level. I think the Boris camp has been hoping that the Nationals circle back. I personally don't see that happening. I think that ship has sailed. But I do think the fit is good in Philly. I just don't know if Scott's going to be able to get that to 326 in the next day or two. It may take a while.
We're talking to Tom Verducci. Tom, before you go, you had a report yesterday for SI.com that Major League Baseball is cracking down on high-tech sign stealing. How widespread was high-tech sign stealing last year, and what exactly were teams doing?
Well, it was becoming widespread, and I think that's why baseball smartly jumped in here. It's probably, I was told, about a half dozen teams. There's cameras all over the ballpark now, and generally they're used in the sense of analytics in terms of producing or measuring the production of hitters and pitchers. But it became something that you could steal signs by putting a camera out in the outfield and having the feed go to the clubhouse, and the clubhouse could relay signs or sequence of signs to the players on the field. And obviously, that's cheating. It shouldn't be allowed. You know, it's fine if you're standing on second base as a runner and the team hasn't disguised their signs and you can pick them up and relay. Everybody realized that's a part of the game. But when you introduce electronics and steel signs, I think people realize that's not the case. And at the GM meetings last November, the GM said basically, hey, we got to stop this thing because before it becomes an arms race on how to cheat in baseball. So good for baseball to jump on this. I think the big thing for baseball is, Jim, you know, we talk all the time about the pace of action, pace of play in the game. It was slowing the game down because people got so paranoid about signs being stolen electronically that they went to much more complicated series of signs that took longer to give. So I'm hoping this actually moves the game along a little bit better.
All right, so then finally, Tom, they want to move the game along quickly. I understand that. And there's always a discussion about how do we make the game better? How do we make the game more entertaining? Hey, how about this? Why don't we give the National League a designated hitter? It's not the first time it's come up. I'm sure it's not going to be the last. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, Jim. I think, and I like the fact that there's two different leagues, two different rules. I do. I think if you like checkers and you like chess, you can pick your poison, which one you like better. I mean, I just think this, it's a better game. It's a more nuanced, detailed game in the National League. It's not to say I'm against the DH, but I hate to see that you would take out that style of play completely. And when you think about it, Jim, it doesn't add that much more offense. Last year, the batting average in the American League was .249, and in the National League, it was .247. That difference over a whole season works out to one hit every 400 at-bats.
Mm.
I mean, because we have so many relief pitchers and pitching changes and pinch hitters, you're talking about 2 at-bats per game in the National League for a pitcher in the first half of the game. I want to live with that to keep that style of play. Hey, it may be inevitable. It probably won't be until the next CBA, the next 3 years from now. Maybe it is going to change down the road. I wouldn't have a problem with using it in all interleague games in the course of a season, but I would not just kind of end the way baseball was meant to be played because you want to see a DH in both leagues.
All right, so it's such a great, great point. So because you said that, one last follow. What do you make of the other rules then? Like banning the shift or requiring every pitcher to face 3 batters? I mean, does that feel like a good solution or is that an artificial answer that really does not address the problem?
It's an artificial answer. It really is. You know, put a pitch clock in, you'll see the game move quicker. We saw it in the minor leagues. You know, in the last 10 years, just the time between pitches is about, the players have added about 2 to 3 seconds. That actually winds up being 13 minutes of a game of nothingness. Just cut that out, and the game will look to you and me like it's moving faster. Put that in, and then later on, let's talk about addressing the strategy of the game, right? Leave the strategy alone. I don't want to stifle innovation and strategy. I mean, somebody comes up with a new offense in the NFL, nobody says, hey, get rid of that offense. Or, you know, a certain different kind of a blitz. Hey, get rid of that. That's not fair. I'm against those kind of governors on innovation and strategy until you absolutely have to do it. We're not close to being there yet. Let's take care of the pace of the game before we start touching the strategy of the game.
Governors on innovation and strategy is a great way to put that. He's an MLB Network insider, a Sports Illustrated senior writer, a New York Times best-selling author, Tom Verducci, my guest. Tom, expertly done. Always great to have you on the show. I appreciate your time, Tom, very much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
That was so fun. Great job, Tom. I'm not sure anybody does any better than him. Tom Verducci. Everybody wants governors on innovation and strategy. It'd be like saying, oh, Sean McVay, we thought of a better way to do it. Better change the rules. And by the way, you didn't need to. The hood took care of that.